There are seven acknowledged wonders of the world. You are about to witness the eighth.
Your attention, everyone.
All this is regrettable, but there's no cause for alarm.
That's right. Back with the Regrettable Podcast.
Regrettably, yes.
None of us are even introduced yet, so I'm your host, Tyler Massey. Of course, with me, both excellent co-hosts, the legendary Jay Lindley. How are you, sir?
What's up, homie?
And, of course, my brother, the newsman, Patrick Massey. That's what they used to call him.
Yep. Most regrettable.
All right, and here we are, back with the Regrettable Podcast, episode 12. Yeah. On the docket or whatever. That's not right.
No. Numero dozen.
There you go. Numero dozen. We're so at.
Weird one.
Yeah.
It's going to be a weird one.
Yep. No Jay Lindley this time.
Turns out he's got better things to do, I guess.
Yeah. Then join us for the podcast.
Yeah.
It's
been a week of excuses from him.
No, he said he would come for just the podcast, and I was like, there's no need.
Yeah, he's got family emergency.
Yeah.
Don't worry about the podcast. Not technically the most important thing going on right now.
No. So hope he's doing well. Everything's doing well. We're going to try and hold it down without him. It'll be a definitely different sounding, I think, and without that third mic.
Yeah, his laugh's great.
His laugh is great. He always has some sort of insight to impart, and of course the voice, you know.
Oh yeah,
the voice, the Jay Lindley voice, not going to be around this time. So we'll try and hold it down as best we can here. We're trying to think of maybe adding just maybe the tiniest bit more structure, you know, maybe a little bit more themes, stuff like that. But I think the whole point of the podcast is like no structure.
Yes,
I think that's the whole main point. So let's continue that by adding just a little bit of structure.
Just like a backbone. And then we just, the ribs just get formed as we go along. Right.
I don't want to add, I don't know about segments.
I don't know.
Yeah. Segments can be hacky.
Sure.
Unless you're really good at coming up with them. And I'm not yet. So, you know, the podcast is evolving. It's developing as we do it. I mean, 12th episode, we're still in our infancy.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, of course, like you said, and other podcasts I listen to all celebrating their 100th. Or something.
Yeah,
so
10 years doing it now.
Yeah,
so we're a little behind.
Yeah. I'm certain their first year, you know, they were still finding their curve and whatnot. So, you know, maybe in the future, another something like this happens, we can find somebody who'd be able to fill in a third seat. But for now, can't think of anybody to elect who can fill that role. So
I can think of a lot of bad ones.
Yeah. But same here. Mm-hmm. Just random hobo off the street. Grab him, throw him in front of the mic, see what happens. It might be really good. Who knows?
Yeah. Put us out of work.
Yeah, that's right. Yep, Jay Lindley out. That's the reason I never want to be away from that chair, because the moment somebody better sits there, I mean, it's, you know.
Yeah, there you go.
So, yeah, absolutely. Regrettable Podcast, episode 12. So, I don't know. We were trying to think of some themes or whatever. Patrick had some stuff he really wanted to go over, and it kind of connected in with stuff that's been bugging me.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think we're just maybe going to talk about, you know, the speculative assholes we are, the future. What's going to happen? The future.
Yeah. It's bound to happen.
That's right.
One way or another.
Future. The podcasts will... I don't know.
But I guess what got me thinking about the future is what's maybe the past for a lot of people now is the $1,400 stimulus check. You got yours. I got mine. We're recording Thursday. I got mine Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
I think I heard a lot of people getting theirs Wednesday.
Yeah.
Much anticipated. Mm-hmm. A lot of fanfare about this, getting it going. But we got it now. It passed in Congress last week, I guess. Yeah. And and here we got it already.
Mm-hmm.
So $1,400, I know you've been stimulating the economy a little bit with it.
I made just one large purchase with it, and that's what I plan on. Just that's the rest is going away.
Yes.
So
exactly what you're not supposed to do.
That's
with
right.
It, right?
Yeah. We were saying to your wife is probably the worst stimulus receiver of all time, because she's not even putting it in the bank so that other people can lend with it,
right?
She or it could collect anything or anything.
So it turns into a bank asset. And
that's right. It's going to be straight cash hidden
under
the mattress or buried in the backyard somewhere where it's of no help to anybody.
Thank you. I was not going to say which mattress it's under in case anyone breaks into my home.
Right. Now there's only one.
Oh yeah, you took the other one.
Yeah, that's right. Now it's going to the other Massey.
Yes.
Yes.
And I'm avoiding debt collectors and loan sharks with mine. So really don't know what I'm going to do with it yet.
Yeah.
I believe in the government. So I do, I have a...
It's a controversial stance you got.
Yeah,
there.
I know, very much. So I'm very much inclined to just fritter it away.
Yeah.
You know, as it seems like the government would want us to do.
Mm-hmm.
But $1,400 in all our pockets, pretty awesome. I think a lot of people really need it.
It's amazing how much you might like socialism after the government gives you $1,400.
Yeah, doesn't take much to turn a person into a socialist,
yeah,
does it?
I guess so. Maybe $1,400, break your arm.
And not be able to afford it. Yeah. You know what? Maybe that free medicine ain't so bad.
Yeah.
One of the things that's really caught my attention is we got the $1,400 check. It's a third stimulus we've got now since COVID-19. Mm-hmm. Got to $1,200, $600. Now it's $1,400. Some folks, especially in the Democratic Party, are saying, you know what? Maybe we should do this more often. Maybe we should make this a regular thing, monthly thing. Maybe what's that nasty little three-letter abbreviation? UBI, Universal Basic Income.
Oh, okay. I was going to say UTI.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, not that.
All right.
But so you got the idea of a UBI, which was around long before Andrew Yang brought it up in the last election. You know, we can't give him all the credit for it, but he really popularized it, made it like presented it, I think, in a way that average folks could really understand and maybe appreciate.
Did Bernie ever bring it up? It's something he could have used, considering his campaign is funded by the people who are broke.
Yeah,
if anybody could have used an extra $1,000 a month, it's probably Bernie.
What I've also found just as interesting, the folks that say let's maybe turn this into a more routine thing are those who say this is ridiculous. It's an outrage. You know, the giving money to people when most folks maybe don't need it. You kind of have, and I'm just going to, I hate to politicize this thing, but you got a lot of Republicans. No Republican voted for this thing, right?
Right.
At least not in the House of Representatives.
Right.
And I don't think in the Senate either. I think it was strictly party line with the vice president breaking the tie. But, you know, we talk weekly with our congressman, Bruce Westerman, who represents District 4, and he more or less said, people don't need it. I mean, to paraphrase him, he said people don't need it. What he didn't quite say, but what is very much in the thoughts of a lot of folks on that same side of the political spectrum, is that the folks who do need it are
incapable of using it.
That's a nice way too dumb to know what to do with it on average.
Right.
Too shiftless, too lazy, too unimaginative. Yeah. There's a reason they're poor to begin with. And again, we're talking about the party of pick yourself up by your bootstraps.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So the idea of doing this on a monthly basis, not something that they're likely to get on board. In effect, I guess what they're asking is, can we trust the poor to do the right thing if we just give them money? Or will they just squander it away? Will they again, you have a UBI come out, maybe people that are working less encouraged to work because they feel like they can get by on whatever that monthly assistance is. Maybe they'll just watch more TV afterwards, which, hey, studies show when people have more free time, what do they do with it? They watch more TV.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know how much empirical evidence there is on that. It's not like people are actually sitting inside people's homes to see, what are you doing now that you have like $1,400? You have a little wiggle room. Are you going to quit your job? You know, I mean, that has yet to be seen. And obviously, we've never had a UBI. We really won't know what the empirical evidence is until we actually implement something like that. Now, don't get me wrong. Work is good. Work is great. It gives people's lives structure. It gives them meaning. It gives them an outlet. But at the same time, we also need to think of the future. And that's what kind of, I think, got this kind of theme rolling here a little bit, is that this talk of a universal basic income, it might become something that's necessary in the future. And if I can kind of go back to this $1,400 again, and there's also included in this bill like a $300 a month payment. It's really like it's the child tax credit, but now it's been like established to an actual, instead of you getting it when you get your tax return, now you're going to get it on a monthly basis, at least for the next year. It's going to it's going to equal like $3,600 per child. And the idea with this is that, hey, first off, public assistance helps kids, you know, and that's kind of like, kids are by definition our future. And giving poor kids a chance with a little bit of money hopefully provides the ladder they need to get out maybe the social status they're in to do better in life.
Right. But Patrick, the money's just going to reach, it's not going to reach the kids. The parents are going to spend it on drugs.
Hey, and that's definitely a legitimate concern. You know, I don't know, like, if, cause there's additional amount given through the stimulus. If you have kids as well, does it come in their name? I don't know. I don't have kids. You don't have kids. I haven't asked anybody with kids exactly how that works.
I don't want
honest.
To.
So, but to kind of, maybe be, I don't want to sound prophetic or anything, but again, let's look at the future. UBI. It might be something that just becomes necessary because of the increasing effects of automation. And it's something I have to tell folks quite often. Don't worry about Mexicans stealing our job. Don't worry about China stealing our factories. Worry about robots taking our job. And at this point, the evidence is out there. It's not just Easy Mart employees that are at risk of losing their jobs. It's not just Walmart checkers. We're talking we're talking many, even very skilled technical jobs that could possibly go the way of the dinosaur in the next 10, 15, 20 years.
Go to the way of the app.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Actually go. Yeah. They'd be replaced by an app. I mean, we're talking. Let's go back to Easy Mart. If it goes to iPads there that you do all that you order off of and a little robotic machine that pulls stuff off the shelves, what do you need a manager for?
Right.
You know, if at Walmart, if you have all your checkers, if the stocking's done automatically, ordering's done automatically, what do you need the managerial staff for? And Walmart's generally seem to have a pretty bloated managerial staff.
Right. What do you need them for in the first place, to be honest? But
I take your point for sure. But what about doctors, lawyers, accountants, even journalists? You know, it used to be many journalists used to have a beat just covering daily, like Wall Street reports, what was happening on the stock market. Yeah, absolutely. Now there's algorithms that do that. Sports reporters are being increasingly taken over by algorithms where you just input the scores and it comes up with a story for you, you know?
Fill in the blanks.
Fill in the blank. And what we're possibly looking at in the future is a quote unquote useless class, you know, not a poor class, not a working class, not your middle class, rich class, a useless class of people that literally have been trained they have trained for a career all their lives that now don't have an actual job to go to.
Right.
I was joking to you about it earlier. Automation has been putting jobs out of work since the 1700s, since the invention of the steam engine, as you mentioned, you know. And one could arguably suggest, and I'm not the first one to conclude this here, but that job displacement caused by technological revolutions is a major driver and perhaps the biggest driver of social upheaval since the 1700s. Now, we, you know, talking about like the class warfare, you know, the poor versus the rich, the bourgeoisie versus the proletariat, communism versus capitalism, these things that have really driven the main events from World War I, World War II, the Napoleonic Wars, all these things can almost be directly tied to social upheaval caused by technological revolutions.
Right.
But what about and this is kind of how it's gone. You used to be like 90-something% of everybody was employed in the agricultural industry until the Industrial Revolution. But those people then were more or less absorbed into the factories that sprung up during the Industrial Revolution
to build the things that replaced them.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, to become floor managers, foremen, you know, just line workers. Yeah. You had new jobs that were created. After the agricultural field was increasingly, workers were replaced by machinery. From there, now that we saw factories getting increasingly automated, you didn't have to have as many people working on a line. More and more factories were getting shipped overseas. If we're looking at it just from an American perspective, a lot of those people then were able to be absorbed by the service sector. You know, now United States, where we're like 70-75% of service industry. Yeah. Absolutely. So you had that pop up, which was a service industry was only really able to to be put in place because of the Industrial Revolution. Now that people had more money, they weren't just farming to survive.
Right.
You actually had some money. Now they wanted to go to restaurants. They wanted to buy things, and those created service jobs. You know, now we're kind of maybe seeing a little shift where some of the service jobs are being replaced by more automation, and now you see a more IT jobs have opened up. But that's also like a much more complex, higher skilled category of work that right. not your average service person is going to be able to ease into or transition into.
And surely there's no replacement program. So it's like, hey, you were dining tables at Denny's. Why don't you work on computers for Microsoft then now?
Yeah, that's a pretty tough jump there.
Because before it was, hey, this plow thing is replacing you in the fields, but we can have you pull this lever every time on the line that builds the plows.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Or then be the guy who fixes the machine that makes the plow, or you right. make the machine that makes the machine that makes the plow. You know, there was that. So, but what are we going to do with this next generation? Maybe even our current generation of displaced workers. This is, again, the so-called useless class. And this is a term that I want to credit to Yuval Harari. He's a sociologist based out of Israel. And he's had some great thoughts, some great books. A really fantastic. It was years ago when I saw a TED Talk with him.
You showed me that one.
Yes, where he was explaining some of this. It's very great. If you can find him, Yuval Harari, check out the, if anything, just check out the TED Talk, 10, 15 minutes where he really describes some of this. And
he's a bit of a downer.
Yes, very much so. Very much so. But what about when AI, so let's say that IT is the new frontier of work.
Yeah.
What about when AI takes over IT, which right. is just, I mean, that's as logical as it sounds, mm-hmm. That it's going to happen. Well, what about when AI takes over engineering, architecture, aircraft maintenance, healthcare, accounting, almost everything else? Can you take a 40-year-old convenience store worker, an insurance salesman? Can you take a hotel manager and have them enter this increasingly complex environment, an environment that is so dominated now by omnipotent, omnipresent AI?
Yeah.
I don't know. Some societies, they see this problem. You know, Sweden, Denmark, a couple of, I mean, you almost look like when it comes to like how a society should function in the future, Denmark and Sweden, two perfect examples.
The happiest countries, and yes. Finland as well, right?
Absolutely, it's Norway.
The happiest countries.
Something about Scandinavia.
I think it's something about, you know, with the healthcare. Some of them are implementing UBI, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Or all of them? Like,
I don't know. Yeah, there is some, and especially with COVID. Like right. you've seen, they're making this like a norm.
Right.
Now, they get taxed heavily. Like, as soon as you enter the workforce in Sweden, expect a tax rate of 29 to 35%.
Right.
You know?
But there's the happiness. That's the important part, because you can put a price on your UBI. You can put a price on your healthcare, but you can't really, like, this sounds hacky, but you can't really put a price on like peace of mind. That's why they're so happy over there, is because they know if something happens to them, they're not just going to be immediately financially ruined.
You know,
they've got the social net to catch them, and there's a lot to be said about that you know. And I don't understand that, to bring it just away quickly,
sure.
about people, you know, especially like left or right, just people railing about this type of thing. Healthcare is a big one, you know. That's obviously a more left-leaning thing to think about, a single-payer, like, universal healthcare system. Mm. Why wouldn't people be on board with that? I just don't understand.
Yeah,
I don't know. Yeah, healthcare debate, let's not even.
It's been so politicized.
Right.
And we've talked about this before, that most Americans, when they think of socialized healthcare, they think of the Canadian example, which healthcare insurance companies specifically, with some backing from pharmaceutical companies and health equipment distributors, things like that, ran a very successful campaign in the 1990s to have the Canadian example brought up and absolutely trashed, to
right.
just be shown to be
falsely
to be shown an absolute failure. They had Canadians that they would pay to come to the United States to talk badly about the Canadian healthcare system. There's actually a book that just came out, and I wish I'd done my research so I could recommend it, but there's a book by the guy, a healthcare professional, who actually spearheaded this. He came up with all the talking points. He worked for a health insurance company, and he came up with all the talking points that he distributed to Republican senators and congressmen.
That
and
said, like, you'll like die in the waiting room, basically, right?
Yes, that you're going to die in the waiting room. Nobody's going to take care of you. You're going to wait 12 hours, you know, if you got a broke arm or a gunshot wound, you know. Just pure lies. I mean, you and I have experienced the healthcare system up there. You're going to wait just as long as you are in the United States.
It's called prioritizing, too. If you got a broken
triaging
arm. Yeah. You got a broken arm, you might wait because your broken arm's not going to kill you, especially when you're in the hospital. You'll be fine.
Yes. You remember that scene in Saving Private Ryan on the beach? Like, they've just, they're starting to consolidate the beachhead at Normandy, and you see that medic who's going, he's got all these guys lined up, and he's got like he's got like a corpsman next to him that he's like, this guy's a goner, this guy, give him morphine. You know, that's a principle of healthcare. You got to triage. You have to prioritize.
Yeah.
You know?
I was watching Band of Brothers, and they focus one episode on the doctor who's running around, the medic, and he's like dealing with, they're getting bombed in Bastogne, so there's missing legs, there's this, and he's going crazy, he's running from foxhole to foxhole, and at one point he's running by a foxhole and guy's like, doc, help me, man, every time I piss it's straight needles, and he's like, yeah, you're fine.
Yeah. It sucks, but
it sucks, but
at least you're peeing.
Exactly.
But I'll come back maybe in post edit or something, Mike. We can add the name of this book real quick, and it's one I've ordered. I've been waiting like a month now to get it, but any case, the guy who orchestrated this anti Canadian healthcare style plan, he orchestrated the opposition to anything like that in the United States. He's come out with a book right now saying, this is what I did and I was wrong and I'm sorry. He's actually, as we speak, on a tour in Canada apologizing to Canadians about the way he trashed the healthcare system in the United States. That's the most Canadian thing ever, you know, to go and do an apology tour. Looked it up while we were talking here. Deadly Spin. An insurance company insider speaks out how corporate PR is killing healthcare and deceiving Americans. Actually, 2010 came out in 2010. So I'm a little wrong, but I heard him on a podcast.
Right. Wendell
Potter is the author. Yes. Heard him on a podcast where he talks about, again, he was a Cigna insurance agent, and his job was literally to go around and trash the Canadian healthcare system, because obviously who was the most to lose in a universalized, socialized healthcare system? Insurance companies.
Right.
So.
They told wrong stories, right, from, or fake stories about, And I guess I was just reading there in 2008, he kind of had like a revelation.
Yeah.
And
then he was like a whistleblower, right?
Yeah.
And to bring it back to Denmark and Sweden, where I kind of brought them up in the first place, is they generally see, these are generally very forward-thinking governments in these societies here, and they see the problem of automation. And maybe not a problem. They just see the change and the adaptations it's going to require in the future. So they actually have programs that will capture you if you're a worker and you get replaced because of automation. They'll provide you with not just social assistance, but work training, job instruction, provide you avenues to then find a new career. Even if you're 40, 50 years old, they provide you, there's a system in place to help folks recover from having their jobs lost due to automation. Now, what do we do about this? Because obviously, progress is progress, and so much of that is technological. I mean, technology is not just going to stop, you know. Are we going to have that point of the singularity in the future where it outstrips our ability to keep up with it? I don't know. We're not there yet, but obviously it is going in that – it's going in an increasingly – our world's going in an increasingly technological direction,
right.
And we can't all. I'm maybe a little bit of a Luddite. I am skeptical of technology and how it automatically means quote unquote progress. But most of us aren't, you know, and we can't all. We can't be Luddites. We can't go back to the 1800s,
right,
or something. But what do we do? And I don't know. You know, that's the thing. I don't know. I don't know if anybody knows. But perhaps part of the key is let's stop training people to be like robots, to be as efficient and 100% efficient in their job, to be robots. Humans cannot compete with robots in efficiency. Obviously, that's why robots are taking those jobs. Maybe it's time, like, we go back to really re-embracing our humanity, because that's the thing that honestly robots will never be able to do. And I'm really skeptical of like AI, as we sometimes want to think, as like a something, a self-aware machine. I right. think AI is only good as it's been programmed. I just don't know if we'll ever have that capacity. And if we do, it might be decades, centuries in the future before we can actually have a self-thinking machine. And not just like the AI that recommends you videos on YouTube,
or the AI they put in those robots,
it's just fancy programming. It's not AI as in that really artificial intelligence. It can conceive of itself.
We don't
in
have
space
that
and
yet,
time no
right?
We don't,
because I feel like the moment we cross that threshold, everything's going to be completely different.
I think that's the singularity event.
Right.
That technologists talk about,
right.
Once we get to that point, it's almost no stopping. There's a debate whether that'll be good or bad for humanity or whatever. But to bring it back, is it's time, man, that we got to make sure being human is a very important thing. That's something we can be proud of, and we do. The more we can embrace humanity, the less likely we are to have robots take over our jobs. And to bring it back,
the only thing that comes to mind is start showing up late.
Right.
Like start not going to work, calling in sick, and then people will be like, ah, robots sounds like a really good idea. I don't know, humans suck.
I know, but sometimes we can embrace that. Like I was to very first podcast we did, I was talking about how I like that when you order a Big Mac from McDonald's, it's a sloppy mess inside the box, because it reminds me there's a human doing it.
Yeah.
I don't want this perfect burger made that I don't know anything about the machine that's making, or what kind of AI is in it. I don't know anything about it.
Like, I think you're an outlier. I think most people want. That's the only reason why it's happening, right?
Yeah. I suppose you're right. And save money because it is not just more reliable. I mean, a human... And we still have to do better. We have to show up on time. We have to not steal from the cash register, okay? Yeah. We don't have to come up with shitty excuses if we don't want to go to work.
So how do we look better than robots but still retain humanity? Like, what's there to even... Because the only thing that humans are better at than robots is messing up.
Yeah, right. And but to maybe... it's a tough one. It's a tough question. I haven't really put my mind around it enough to probably give you the best answer. And I'll just go off real quickly what I do, and that journalism is I've told you about some of the journalistic fields that are under threat or already have been taken over by AI. To go back to the humanities with journalism, I don't think computers can do investigative journalism. Computers can't do feature journalism where you interview and talk to a local person in your community that's done something amazing. I don't know, it's tough, but I think that's probably the only option we have, and we just need to develop that idea more. Is we need to figure out ways to not be replaced by machines, and the only way to do that is to do the things that the machines can't do, even if it means sloppiness. We have to just as I've told you before, I think the best thing parents can do is not send their kids to Harvard or Yale or other Ivy League universities. Send your kids to state colleges, to your local universities and community colleges. Yes.
Grade 13.
Don't teach them like they have to be these perfect, amazing people that are going to be Goldman Sachs capital investors in the future. Like, let's embrace mediocrity a little bit in our society. Let's just slow down a little bit. There's nothing wrong with that, you know?
Right. No, I'm with you. I think the people can get with that. The whole, let's keep things human, because I would much rather a 17-year-old kid messing up my Big Mac sandwich than a perfect, computer making it and spitting it out at me. Like, there's something I would still rather having the 17-year-old mess it up. But McDonald's, as an overarching company, they're going to much rather a computer doing it. It's cheaper. It's more efficient. You spit out 100 of them at a time. Like,
I think the impetus is on the consumer to maybe demand.
Oh, I see.
Yes.
So I'm not going to buy your burger unless it's put together with a kid with acne on his hands.
Or what?
Gross.
or exactly what you do when you go to Walmart. You do not go to the self checkout. You purposely go to the one cashier that they keep. They're gonna be,
what are you doing here?
What do they even do with the rest of those lines anymore? Those
they're all shut down.
They're all shut down. But you go to the one that's open every time.
And I'll wait.
Yeah, I know you joke. Oh, I'm sorry, I had to bring my apron with me today. Yeah. Do I need to bring a dustpan with me? Sweep
check
up
the schedule. Like,
yeah, right. You know, maybe more of that, where we demand that we demand humanity out of our corporations too. Hey, politically, corporations get to act as people, you know, and why not societally as well?
Right, right. I know we trash Easy Mart a lot, and we've said, oh, put an iPad in its place, but when I'm being absurd, you know, I would much rather the annoying ass person behind the counter than probably an iPad. Technology, progressing, advancing. You think it's going to be, but everything, it always breaks, man. It always breaks. And then everything's going to get passed. Anytime a computer breaks, that cost is going to get passed on to the consumer.
Sure.
Or progressing, like with cars and stuff. Like having to make the car have the technology that will alert you when there's a child left in your back seat. Why? That's not BMW's responsibility to make sure your dumb ass doesn't leave your kid in the back seat. And guess what? Yep. That's another sensor that the cost is passed to the consumer and is going to break. Mm-hmm. And now you're going to have to take your car in and, as a single person with no kids, have to have the kid check monitor light thing fixed.
Right.
You know,
right.
Probably under warranty at least.
And but, all the excuses where people drive around on flat tires, like, well, my tire pressure sensor didn't go off. Yeah. So I left my kid in the back seat for 4 hours. Yeah. Well, the light didn't work, and then BMW gets sued. If I could mention, go back to Easy Mart just real briefly, let's say the iPad or whatever AI system malfunctions. Do you think they got an AI or an IT engineer just in the back? Do we have one here in Duquesne? Do we have one in Southwest Arkansas? No, they're going to have to call one from Little Rock. They're going to call somebody from Dallas or Kansas City.
Yeah.
It's going to drive down here hours to fix this thing. It's going to be even greater convenience if you just had the meth addicted slack jawed person working in there. You
plus
know?
It gives them a place, man. I can't fault an Easy Mart. We trash them all the time, but I can't fault an Easy Mart. That's where they have to be. That's their last line of the of and they are employed.
Yes.
At the very least, I can commend them for standing there for like 9 hours.
Yeah.
And giving people their cigarettes and gas. You know, God bless you, basically, you know.
Right. And here's the fork in the road that to kind of tie this all back together, this rant of mine here. Here's the fork in the road, the crunch that we have to figure out and a situation we're at right now. And it's only going to get worse. What do we do? UBI? Here's our two options. Allow automation. It's going to happen either way. Do we let people just fall to the wayside and starve to death, you know, because now they don't have jobs, they're not qualified to do anything else? Or do we go back to the UBI? That's the fork. The only way to progress society is we got two choices. We automate and we implement UBI or that UBI to take care to uplift the useless class or do we go back in time? Do we do with the Japanese did in the 1800s, and we throw all of our technology into the ocean and go back to you know, everyone farms for a living.
Of course, I like the idea of UBI, and I like the idea of UBI helping the poor rather than the useless. Because at the same time, like...
Well, it's useless through no fault of their own.
No. Or the useless class, as you were and what's his face?
Yuval Harari.
Harari calls him.
No, sorry.
You know, you're fine. What is it really going to help, though? I mean, is it just a Band-Aid? Like, so let's take an attorney or an accountant or something that their job is just, boom, it's just replaced by an app or a computer of some kind. And now they don't have a job. So the UBI is supposed to kind of keep them going while they get one of the other jobs that isn't around anymore? Like, that's not exactly a solution, right? I mean, it helps.
But that's, again, the useless class is the idea that these people are going to lose their jobs and never be able to get decent work anywhere else.
Right, right. So the UBI is there to...
For the rest of your life.
For the rest of your life while you... probably get a job in service, because there's service will never go away, I don't think.
Or maybe you don't get a job either. One of the things that Yuval Harari mentions a lot when he talks about the useless class. These are people who are literally, this is something we're gonna have to if not accept as a society, is something we're going to have to talk about. And that's the idea, is that there is going to be a point in time where we're going to pay people to do nothing.
Right.
There's nothing for them to do. And that's one of the things that technological architects always talk about, is like, oh, well, we're in the future, robots will do all the mundane tasks. People won't have to do it anymore. Well, people have been doing those things for a long period of time. Not everybody can be an IT engineer.
Yeah.
You know, there will literally come a time when people, there's no work for them to be done. They literally will just have their own time and get paid for being at home. And that's a tough thing.
It's scarier than T-1000s taking over.
I would rather,
at least we don't have the choice. Exactly. It's not on us to figure it out. I would rather robots come through with lasers and blast me to death than just be replaced not only by Humorbot 5000.
Yeah, right.
And
right.
And I can't even get an Easy Mart job now because it's damn, and I'm getting paid $1,000 to just like brush Dorito dust off of my chest and say, well, that's a day's of work right there.
Yep.
I'd rather be killed. I'd rather be killed by the
robots.
You could
live like a hobbit, you know? And you just farm and garden. You got your own, now you get to explore your hobbies. I mean, that's one of the philosophical questions we have to ask.
Where we go?
Oh, okay. If the government, if you don't have to work, what do you do with your free time? Do we all eat nothing? I mean, do we turn into obese diabetic monsters? You know.
So the future is looking like the past. To where, like, so the future is going to put us out of work to the point where now we're having to live like we used to, or like hobbits, which sounds fine. I've always said, you know, like, hell, you instead of saying, oh, everybody should have to do this to, you know, work on a farm for a year, let's start with myself, so I'm not offending anybody. I could definitely use a damn years of farm work in my life to be a better person, to figure out, you know, this and that, figure out some vital good human things, right? Right. Mm-hmm. So I guess I'm not completely, you know, averse to that.
And let's think too that as I said earlier, work is vital. It provides structure and meaning to people's lives. But is it the most important thing in our lives? Probably not. You know, relationships. You know, we're social creatures. I think relationships, obviously, that's one of the things that work provides you.
You know who you sound like? 1990s Donald Trump.
Yeah,
when he's like, there's that classic soundbite that goes, or the video where it's like that lady's interviewing him, and he's like, Donald, what means more, money or love? And he was like, I would say love. And then he says, what's more important, like work or enjoying yourself? And he's like, you gotta enjoy yourself. That old guy, yeah, remember him?
Yeah. Exactly. You know,
like 90s Trump.
You know, there's something not wrong with being. And I don't know if being lazy is inherently wrong. And let's just take Southern Europe. I don't want to sound bigoted or racist or anything, but there is something about people in Southern Europe, Italy, Spain, Portugal, Greece. They live very relaxed, enjoyable. They're very poor, or a lot of them see their social welfare systems are at the point of collapse.
Right.
You know, because now people want to be poor, but also enjoy, like they want to be kind of lazy and poor, but also not be poor. They still want to have like internet and the nicest iPhone and all that. You know, that's a whole other thing.
Poor is completely different, even from just 50 years ago, I think, right?
But there's something about like having dinner for 3 hours with your family, drinking wine, not having to get up at 6 o'clock in the morning to get ready for work that you're going to be at for 8, 10, 12 hours a day. They live longer. Those people live longer. You know, there's something to take all that stress out of your life. You know,
just look at like definitely Italy, right? Mm-hmm. Italy's that, or Spain. You know, they're just chilling. Like you go there to a coffee shop. It's like, so what do you do? What do you mean? What do I do?
Yeah, this is what right I here. Do.
Yeah,
and they catch so much flack from your like Northern Europeans, your British and your Belgians and Germans. Uh-huh. Yeah, you're like, you got to be productive. But what good at the end of the day does that really do? If you spent your whole life working just to die, when you could have spent your whole life being around family and doing the things that you love, and maybe just doing enough to get by.
Right.
But again, contentedness. Being satisfied, those aren't qualities that are taught or stressed in our modern culture anymore, at least not in Western society. It's all about make money, get rich, do more, work harder, buy more things. Mm-hmm.
future versus the freedom from facts future. I want to speculate on what people in the future will think about us, depending on which way society goes. If we continue to cancel and omit things that we don't agree with, especially if it was in the past, then I think it would behoove us to use our extrasensory, politically correct perception to go ahead and cancel things that we do now so we don't look stupid later.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
Hypocrisy is prevalent on both sides, but because it's no secret that I'm a progressive-leaning person, I'd like to focus on the things that I see fellow progressives doing. Strong air quotes. Climate change is a big problem we're facing, and I think most of the people on the left agree. Sorting your recycling and driving efficient vehicles is nice, but have you stopped to think about that useless thing that you ordered that was made in China and that you absolutely need it by the next day, what that's doing to the environment? Mm. Chinese manufacturing pumping out pollution in the process of making it, even though China has adopted like cap and trade restrictions and basically taxing pollution. There's still a lot of it shipped over here, put in giant warehouses where people work 9 hours straight to get it onto like 3 trucks in the process to make it to your house, wrapped in an insane amount of plastic and packing materials to only be thrown away in a month once you realize how useless it was to order it in the first place. Why the hell do you need a quesadilla maker shipped to you in 24 hours? Unless you're having a Tex-Mex Super Bowl party and your last quesadilla maker malfunctioned and burned your fingers to fajita meat the night before, you don't need the crap you feverishly order on Amazon.
There's a such thing as a quesadilla maker?
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
I thought it was just a glass pan?
No, it's just a clamp press like a waffle maker.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, you got to kill the environment in the old-fashioned way and shop at Walmart. at least then you can have some human interaction in the process. Maybe. If the Walmart assistant isn't too busy searching up women on Facebook to harass, and the cashier isn't a robot that seems to mess everything up. The damn thing doesn't work. Mm-hmm. What's the point of automated tellers if a human needs to come and fix the machine just so you can get the hell out of there? Every time.
Oh, yeah,
every time I go through, it's a red light pops up, and they got to come and throw a card that scans or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, but back to human interaction, there isn't any. In 10 years, we'll definitely see the effects of this rat generation raised on iPads and sugar. Sure, I've definitely met kids that were polite and looked you in the eye, but they're still on the cusp of that generation. We've not seen the generation of people with total access to social media, mindless YouTube videos, porn, and conspiracy theories all available from the age of 3.
Oh, man.
You know? That must be why I see so many parents getting bullied by their children. they take it like a beaten mule, yet when a teacher gives your kid an F because you're too busy scrolling yourself to help them with their homework, you blame the teachers and the bullies and the curriculum, not the poison screen that you give them so they can shut up and watch while their eyes burn, hanging open like Clockwork Orange, fixated on loud noises and bright colors. Are all of these things going to become worse in the future? Where are jobs going to go? What are we going to eat? What kind of useless technology are we going to invent? Is it going to be a Mountain Dew Camacho future? or a such a woke that you can never sleep kind of future? Both stupid in their own ways. While I ultimately agree and feel our woke citizens, they have to realize that even though they think they know how to live your life better than you, not everyone is on the same level like that. Some people don't think about the progressive issues because they are dealing with the original problem of being broke.
Yeah. Poverty, kind of the core of humanity's problem over the years.
That's right. So progress is happening, but it's being slowed down by progress. Where are we headed next, man? I mean, like, just society-wise, you were talking about automation and what kind of jobs that's going to leave us with in the future and how to change that. If we're going to talk about the future, my mind immediately goes to which one is it going to be? I mean, I don't want to be here and sit, you know, say a civil war is on there, but there's two overarching mindsets. In America, we have 15 different brands of cereal, or 100 different brands of cereal, 15 different flavors of Lay's potato chips, 100 choices for everything except for, you know, I guess, ideologies.
Mm.
It's either one or the other. And of course, it doesn't work like that. That's just our system. We have blue or red,
sure,
you know,
sure.
And whether, you know, Donald Trump was saying that a lot. You may hate me, but you have to vote for me. He was always saying that. You know, you have to vote for me because that's the party of crazies.
Yep.
And all they did was make Donald Trump right. How did you mess that up, by the way?
No doubt. No doubt.
All you did is made Donald Trump sound really, really spot on with some of his stuff. So
I would say where they've screwed up and where we're still screwing up and where we're obviously going to screw up for a long time is that our politics is so focused on identity politics now. It's on identity culture. We have forgotten that the core of society is economics.
Yeah.
I mean, that is the math of human society. That math is what rules everything in this universe. Okay, from subatomic particles to the way the galaxies spin around.
Yeah.
You know, math also has a part to play in human interactions, and I feel like the most basic mathematical language of human interactions is economics.
Right.
Is how much money people have in their pocket and how they can get more.
Right.
Or how they end up getting less.
Right.
You know?
And their whole personality and happiness is based on their money in their pocket.
Yes.
You know?
And this may be this would be an anti-woke thing to say, and I've seen people be almost canceled for saying things like this. It's like, man, it's class is really like the number one division in our society. It's less so racism, sexism, feminism, transphobia. These are things that are just like auxiliary components of class deprivation.
Right.
You know, is something we've talked about before, and it is very much arguable, but I think that there is a correlation between the amount of money in someone's pocket and how racist they are or how bigoted they are towards a particular group. The more money you have, the less likely you are to be concerned about what other people are doing.
Right.
I think that that's just natural.
Right. And then when you think about billionaires, what their racism is, it's more class-based. Because it's less that they're racist on one particular amount of people. It's more just poor.
Yes.
Poor people.
Yes.
Which they lump, you know, which is a racist thought to lump all of the non-white people into that. That's just what they do, though.
Mm-hmm.
But it really is less about skin color, I think, at that point, and more about how did I get my billions and like how do I make sure I keep it and continue making that.
Right.
And that's
right.
By... you know, either selling people crap they don't need and making them think they need it, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think
keeping shareholders happy,
yep.
You know,
yep.
And that's not. Yeah, there's plenty of rich people who are very racist, but they can't always be so overtly about it.
Right.
Because, again, they've made their fortunes off minority groups and the targets of racism.
Right.
So they have shareholders who demand better than that from them.
If you're broke in a trailer, it's easier to believe that you're there because of a Mexican.
Yes, absolutely.
Right.
And that human nature has long been programmed to not accept your own mistakes.
Right.
You know, you always want to look for the other, to blame your situation on somebody else. So if you're really poor, it's quite easy to blame it on somebody who just looks different than you.
And like, I mean, with the Capitol riots, the lady who was shot and killed,
mm-hmm.
we talked about that. It was one of our first podcasts.
Right. Ashley Babbitt.
We poked fun and whatnot, but it's real tragedy, actually, when you really think about it. I mean, she was a veteran,
mm-hmm.
you know, and
to be so radicalized.
Yeah.
To put herself in that position. And
yeah. And she was financially really down. And because she had whatever, it was like a loan that she took that was getting charged like 200% interest and she could never pay it back. Yeah, she's railing on the Democrats for that problem.
Mm.
But it's not even really like, you know, the reason everything is down is because of not, you know, anybody who's not white and just the
immigration.
The rhetoric that goes on with all of that. She believes it, buys into it. Fox News, stuff like that poisons the mind. And then she goes out and for a cause gets shot when it's not really a Democratic or a Republican thing. Why she's getting charged that amount of interest. You know, that's a corporation thing. That's a class thing. That's a divide between the have and the have nots. Right.
Right.
And while, I mean, I'm just going to say it, people like Elizabeth Warren are the reason that they don't charge 1,000% interest. She was there with consumer protection stuff.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
And bringing all that to the table. But that doesn't make it to a lot of people. That is, you know, like we look at people like why does the left like these people so much? like Elizabeth Warren, and like, because they actually do stuff. They actually have done stuff. It's not like they're just on stage for the first time going, you know what, I want to protect this. And yeah, it all sounds great. They actually did things. That's the same reason why people like Chris Christie.
Yeah.
I mean, that dude, he's in New Jersey, which I feel is a pretty, it would be easy for a Democrat to be elected there and hard for a Republican.
Yeah. Yeah. Good point.
Yeah. And while I'm sure there's definitely some, I don't know if gerrymandering and stuff factors into it and, you know, making sure that you're ready to win the election. But like people like Chris Christie in New Jersey, they do. Have you ever actually heard him sit down and talk?
He's not a dumb guy.
Dude, he is not a dumb guy. It's so easy to make fun of that guy. But like, you know, he really does. He's more Trump than Trump. Mm. He absolutely speaks his mind, and he has that kind of New York, New Jersey, you know,
ready
accent
to shake things up a little bit.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
And I can understand that, you know.
He can do Bridgegate and still remain in office, you know. And
yeah, he's just not, and he's definitely not a dummy, like, at all. And I guess that makes sense. I don't know exactly where, how we got onto this, but basically I'm like, what, you know, I wanted to focus more on the identity politics on the left, because there's absolutely identity politics on the right. It's just like, I don't know, there seems to be more of a shoot yourself in the own foot, in your own foot on the left side. And I just, you know, that is that going to continue? Like I said, is it going to be the Mountain Dew Camacho future where we just don't care about facts? Everybody's just like complacent and lets whatever they do, whatever is happening to them, just let it happen. Because whatever news you're intaking, or none at all, or whatever, you're just fine. You're on Facebook, doesn't matter. Or the woke. I mean, are we going to wake ourselves into a sleep? I mean, like, I don't understand. Like, there's just that divide where, yeah, maybe people are more concerned about being broke than what's going on in some bathrooms or this and that. They really don't care. Why is that a thing? Why are they, you know?
And that's, I think part of the problem is that economics is not a simple field of study. Now, it sounds really easy. Mm-hmm. Supply and demand, you know, stuff like that. Economists are generally pretty brilliant people, and they study for really long periods of time, very, very arcane stuff, you know.
Historical, right?
Historical.
Like, they have to.
Right, and they still get things wrong all the time. Somebody who says they understand economics generally means, it's like people say, oh, I know what gravity is. That probably means you don't.
Right.
You know, to say that you understand something like that, really, people who do or will be the first ones to say it's almost un-understandable.
Right.
That's not a word, is it?
You just made it one. It makes
right,
sense to me.
All right, sounds good, right? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I would like to say to that somebody, explain gravity, what it is.
Me?
No.
Okay, dodge the bullet there.
Yeah, we all know.
I believe in it. I have faith in it.
Yeah,
for sure.
I have faith in it for sure. Drop this on the ground, it's going to fall to the ground. But why?
I see a lot of talk right now about gasoline prices. They have been going up, and there's a lot of talk. It's Biden's fault.
As
people look for the path of least resistance, that they look for the simple solution to complex problems, it just doesn't work that way.
Right.
And if you think that, and I am not trying to protect Biden. I'm not trying to apologize for anybody here. It's not his fault gas prices are high.
Right.
Unless he's going around tipping over gas trucks, you know. That's the way gasoline prices are so speculative.
Yeah.
Seriously, to go back to that, a fuel truck tips over in Texas, gas prices in New York City jump up 20 cents. That is how speculative that market is. Folks who think they have an understanding of how pricing is done in the energy industry have no idea what they're talking about, because even the folks who do are like, hey, look, there's a lot of gray zone in this. There's just a lot to not understand, because gas prices are almost tied to human nature. Like how much people travel, you know, is a big thing. Gas prices have been depressed for the last year for a few different reasons. One is COVID-19. There was a lot of travel restrictions. People travel less. There's less demand for gasoline. Well, that honestly means that the prices are going to have to drop some.
Right.
And a lot of the folks that I see nowadays, or right now, talking about trying to blame the current president for why gas prices are going up. Well, they failed to even factor in things like Saudi Arabia. That's a lack of like a this is we live in a planet. There's a lot more than just the United States here, and we live in it. I mean, every day we are more and more globalized. Like something, the butterfly effect. Yeah. I mean, literally some. One well shuts down in Saudi Arabia, gas prices over here are gonna increase. It's a very tight. The point I'm trying to make is that these are very complex situations, very complex, just environments, and we can't always boil it down to the simplest things, and to me that's why our politics focus so much on identity. That seems easy. It seems economics is difficult. It's and there's a lot to lose by making our economic climate more equitable, you know, by making sure that more people have enough,
right?
That you know, enough to get by and to have a good life. You know, man, that's difficult to do. Yeah. But what both sides can focus on is this identity politics. And you're talking about wokeness. If I can, the fear I have, and I would argue with anybody who's woke that you and I, we understand wokeness. We understand patterns in history that have, and we're alert to it. We can identify
sensitive
these patterns and sensitive to it. But there's also this. I can understand the anti-woke backlash, and let's the idea that if you if you've never done anything wrong in your life, okay, you have ground, you have moral high ground, and if you think that you have never done anything wrong in your life, you are in a state of denial or you're Jesus. Okay,
right.
One of those two. and my concern right now with the level of wokeness, this cancel culture. I mean, we can get back to what like wokeness in the future is going to.
Right.
Like,
well, I don't even know how we can.
Yeah, a lot of folks who are woke right now are doing things that 20 years from now are going to seem like terribly offensive.
Yeah.
But in any case, what you're seeing with the anti-woke backlash is people are tired of being judged, and now the judges are being judged, and that's that claiming to be unwoke to the anti-woke. Now you have now you have people saying that they're woke to the woke. That's
right.
The anti. Like, we know what you're doing. You're trying to be on this this moralistic, self-righteous, overly sensitive, judgmental high ground. You know, this feeling of superiority over other people. Which is that not bigotry? To think that you're better than somebody, and now it's not the realm of racism or gender or anything else as far as identity. It's just ideas. And my comes awfully close to like thought police.
Right.
You know, that, oh, I think better than you, so I'm a better person than you. I'm better. You should be canceled or you should have your career ruined, you know.
Or at least nowhere near me. Where I can, like, why can't I hold these ideas and I listen to woke people? That's the problem. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, and I listen to quote unquote unwoke people or anti woke or whatever. And I can't even believe it's a term. It's just dumb to me.
Yes.
I don't know. I feel like it was coined by who made that?
I don't know, but I mean, I guess you could go like, back to the idea of Buddha, like his real name is Siddhartha, right? Which is kind of like to mean to be awake, to be enlightened. But enlightenment is also something like to be understanding of the situation you're in, not to be like feeling you're better than other people. That's what enlightenment's not. It's not about that.
Buddha will listen to you. He's not going to unfriend you.
Yeah, that's absolutely. You know, so and what does that mean in practical terms? How do we decrease racism? How do we increase social justice? And it's not by pushing people in the shadows. It's not by canceling them, ruining their careers, you know, forcing radicalization on otherwise normal good people. It's by influencing them through knowledge, you know, through relationships, by maybe offering them some redemption, you know. You know, you shed ignorance through proximity to other people. You no relationships, no change. If you know relationships, you know change. You know, it sounds so corny when I say
it's just, you know.
Yeah, there's a quote I remember from Nelson Mandela. I don't remember it exactly, so I'm going to paraphrase here. But try to assume the best of other people, because you'll help them bring that out.
Right.
Even if they don't have it, even if they're not displaying it right then and there, if you assume the best in people, it will eventually show itself.
Right. I saw a Facebook post the other day from a person who's extremely like a liberal progressive person on my Facebook. And again, just because I don't agree, and I'm in that camp. I have to subscribe to it. I have to take that on. I have to. But I don't agree with it 100%. And maybe it's because of where I lived. Maybe it's because of the perspective I've had from big city to small town, rural Arkansas, blah, 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 to wherever.
Man, you've really got to see a broad range of modern society.
Right. And she, and the post was, "What the hell is Kansas?" Which is funny, I guess. It got a bunch of like laugh emojis or whatever, and people being like, "I don't even know this." But man, Kansas is it's Kansas.
Yeah. What an ignorant statement, yeah, really, exactly. If you look at it face value.
Yeah. And how are you going to blame Kansas? That was like the trickle down state. The ones that are still, I don't even know if they're still trying to practice that.
But not originally. Yeah. Right. It used to be the most socialist,
But that's why they had a huge surplus go into a massive deficit, Because it was like, all right, well, let's cut the taxes for the rich and see if it falls down on the low man. And of course it doesn't.
I mean, thank Brownback for that. And that's not a racist statement.
No,
okay,
no.
He's a white guy.
Sam Brownback, yes, right? Yeah. And I was watching something recently where they showed his opponent, who I don't remember his name, because he's stomped out in the history of that state. But he had like something like 100 some odd, votes or whatever it is. He was gaining momentum, big momentum. And then it came out that when he was like 26, he went to a strip club. Down. How many strip clubs are in Kansas? Are you going to judge a dude going to a strip club who you previously liked? How many have you been to?
Yeah,
like,
no doubt.
How are you going to cast a stone?
It was a bachelor party or something. I mean, come on.
Man. Yeah. And of course he has to come out and apologize and be like, "Oh, I did not touch any. I was wrong place, wrong time."
Yeah, they'll kick you out if you do that.
Yeah, that's true.
He brought a bunch of $1 bills.
Yeah.
and had a couple of drinks and
so what? That's all the guys. Now I'm not going to say Anthony Wiener's. It turned out to be a total piece of crap.
Yeah.
But Elliot Spitzer.
Mm-hmm.
That guy was I love listening to that guy talk. I think he was. I mean, I haven't heard from him in a long time,
right.
But yeah. I know he got a show. I think he got a show on CNN or something. I don't know if it worked out, but whatever. Got caught with a prostitute and down the drain he went.
Right.
And not just by Republicans either. It was Democrats who were like, "This is will not stand for this." It's subjects, whatever demeaning women by doing that and stuff. I don't know.
And then we elect a guy who just like buys his prostitutes from East Europe and gets them, get some citizenship over here. But Kansas now, I will say, is a perfect example of what voting against your own interests will do.
Yeah,
Talking about from that surplus to this austerity package that they implemented in Kansas that ruined their state economy.
Right.
But at the same time, this person who says, "What is Kansas?" It's a state of millions of people.
This person lives in Arizona, and I get it. Arizona just flipped blue, but Phoenix did.
Yeah.
Phoenix flipped blue.
And Flagstaff,
And Flagstaff. Well, the Flagstaff was probably always blue.
Right.
Not Winslow. Not
Cornville.
What is it? Yuma.
Yeah.
Those places, they stayed red.
Yes.
Trust, they stayed red. You should ask what's Yuma or what's, and you shouldn't even be asking that.
Right.
You shouldn't be.
It's a failure to understand.
Yeah.
Discrediting other people under the guise of wokeness is just as anti-woke as almost anything else is.
Right. And I don't know. I know California's struggling really hard right now, but they were able to turn a huge deficit into a big surplus and then back, I guess. I don't know if they're still hurting like that.
No, they still got like $50 billion. I'm sorry, like a $400 or $500 billion surplus now.
Right. Yeah. And that was, so I'm not here advocating one form of economics versus the other, but I'm ready to say I don't freaking understand it at all. And it's something maybe we should talk about or maybe we should just not talk about it.
Mm.
Isn't that it's become so... Do you remember hearing our parents talk about politics?
Gosh, no.
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 And of course we do now.
And back then, even if they did, maybe it was like minor economical issues.
Yeah.
You know,
the big faux pas that a presidential candidate could do was like rolling their eyes or something, sighing.
Yeah.
That was the big scandal. I remember Al Gore. What is that? You know, Obama saluted with coffee in his hand. Those were the scandals.
Yeah.
It's so different, and on both sides too. And
it's almost like a de-evolution. It's like crasser, cruder society, you know. Yeah. And I don't know. Maybe that we were talking earlier that the closest parallel to America in all of human civilization history is Rome. And you look when Rome fell, the harder that the barbarians knocked on the walls of Rome, the greater the orgies were within Rome, the bigger the spectacle was inside the Colosseum. I mean, maybe that's just human nature, is we're ostriches, and the worse things get, the more we want to bury our heads in the sand. But when it comes to identity and politics, you know, it is now all about like just driving this increasing wedge. Let's all just figure out what makes us different than everybody else. When it's like, man, we are at a time we need to figure out what's all similar about us, because most things are. You can take anybody in this country of any persuasion, and they probably want the same things. They want to make some good money. They want to drive a reliable car. They want their kids to go to a good school. They don't want to stay up all night wondering how they're going to put food on the next on the table the next day.
Right. Yeah, you're right. Stability. Everybody just wants that. And then just the freedom to do whatever they like, you know, which I'm an advocate for. I don't think you should get shamed for wanting a Big Mac.
Sure. Yeah, right.
I don't eat a Big Mac. I don't care. But you shouldn't.
Yeah.
You shouldn't. But you should. You know what I mean? Right. Like, that's why we shouldn't even be really talking about this as much as we do. Yeah, you shouldn't eat a Big Mac, but you absolutely should, man. Eat a Big Mac.
There's the freedom to do the wrong thing.
Exactly. Maybe. That's right. That's right. But, you know, at what point, you know, that's why all those apocalyptic movies, all of them, always like there's always like Snowpiercer and The Giver and stuff like that. It's always an uptight lady at the top telling people, like, you know, whatever. It's like the moment that you give people the freedom to make the choice, they make the wrong one.
Right. Right.
You know, and there's almost a part of that I agree with, but that's called authoritarian, you know, that's that type of government, which is not good. Like China is not model at all.
No.
But there's got to be.
But it's a very successful one, but it's not the right one.
Right.
You know, that authoritarian capitalism, you know, because, China, its political system's communist. But I mean, it embraces capitalism just as much as we do here, you know, on a societal level. And yes, absolutely. Something in the middle.
Yeah. That's yet to ever be created, right?
Well, I mean, it has, and it is. It does exist, but on much smaller scales than either China or the United States. If you were to use those both extremes, which I think is a perfect example, you know, they are the individual versus the society. The two that come to mind, maybe three, the Scandinavian countries, Switzerland, and Singapore. These are very technocratic societies where there is social planning involved, but they're also capitalist societies. It's still, you still get a little bit of rope to hang yourself, you got the slack to do the right thing and the bad thing, but at the same time, there is very much an idea that society can only progress as its lowest members, so we got to make sure there is that net that catches those people and keeps them pushing, keeps pushing forward. Now, don't get me wrong, that still gets in extreme. Like in Singapore, it's against the law to spit in the sidewalk. Now, as much as I hate spitting, I hate people doing that. I don't know if I want to see the government enforce that.
Right.
Like, I would like to think that people know better than to spit. Right. Most people do. They don't need a law telling them not to spit.
End of the day, spit dries up in the sun.
Yeah, that's right. It's not. It's really not going to harm anything. And that is one thing we've seen. To me, spitting is a perfect example of like societal progression. People back in the day spit everywhere all the time. That was like there was industries involved in collecting spit. You know, now people just know better.
Yeah,
or they do it privately.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
the one thing that you brought up a little bit ago, this is kind of off the rails, but I did want to say it. It's actually last night we were talking to a friend, and I don't know if he meant it this way, but this is the way that I took it. We were basically talking, but we live in an area where it's mostly white people. Mm-hmm. Now, there's a large group of Hispanic community here, but let's just focus on the white people.
Yeah, and the kind of the powers that be.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And I think we were talking a little bit about some woke issues and stuff, and he said, you know, well, there's not many black people around here, and the ones that I know are absolutely no different from white people, mm-hmm. you know, or as in they got manager positions on the production line at the chicken plant,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
just like everybody else around here.
He can't see the problem.
Yeah, and he said that. He's like, I just don't see the problem. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't tell if he was saying, like, I don't see the problem, or I physically do not see the problem in front yeah. of me. I do not see it.
And that's therefore, a brilliant distinction you bring up.
That's right.
And I think he's our friend. Mm-hmm. I want to, and I really do think he was like, I can't see the problem.
Right.
You know, it's not in front of me, so yeah. I don't understand it.
I felt like he kind of meant it like, I don't see the problem.
Yeah. Yeah.
Of what's going on, because I know black people around here.
Yeah, and they're doing fine.
Understandable. A lot of this, you know, we're not Baltimore. That's not what
right,
we're,
that, right.
There's no argument there.
Go to urban Atlanta,
right.
you know, where it's where you might have 70, 80, 90%
yeah.
black communities that are that high percentage black people. You're right. going to see some problems. You're
right.
going to see where society has left these people mm-hmm. behind, where government has just thrown these people to the wolves.
That's why it's the city folk versus the country's folk.
Right.
I mean, it's literally, and I don't see the problem, and I don't see the problem. They actually mean the same thing. It doesn't matter which emphasis, which word you put the emphasis on. You don't see the problem. Hands in the air, shrug, because you don't see it. Like
it's not right in front of you.
And that's why just living in a city, you're immediately going to see problems.
Yes.
You're going to see and then become more sensitive to it and this and that.
And maybe that works a little bit opposite or vice versa, too. Mm-hmm. If you're there, you live in an urban environment and you see the problem every day,
mm-hmm.
then you just automatically assume that problem's everywhere.
That's right. Or that everybody should see it. Why
yes.
don't you
yeah,
see
yeah,
this?
Yeah.
What is Kansas? Well, maybe a lot of places in Kansas, they physically don't see the problem.
Mm-hmm.
They don't. I don't know.
And that's how do you shed ignorance? It's through proximity. It's
right.
relationships again.
Right. It's not that we're more woke. I mean, places in Canada where we were literally next door with East Indian people, Muslim people
yeah.
down the road.
Everybody was
Filipino.
Cool. With
yeah.
it. It's more maybe the kind of cliche, but more the tossed salad.
You sure?
Where the components, they're not combining. They're staying
right.
separate from one another.
That's right. And I think that's important, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's no reason. I think the main thing is this whole, and I keep thinking of it, what is Kansas? Go there.
Mm.
And guess what? Go there and don't talk about politics. Go there and talk about the weather with somebody. It was a hot day.
You're probably going
to
like it.
You're probably going to like it. You're probably going to enjoy. And if you're listening and you live in the same county as us right now, dude, if you go to LA and walk into one of the hipstery coffee shops and sit down, guess what? The coffee's fucking delicious.
Yeah.
It's delicious. And you're going to order whatever little hipstery meal and it's going to be good. And the guy next to you, as long as you don't identify politics and stuff with them and
build
just,
that wall between you
exactly,
and them.
Exactly. You'll probably end up having a good conversation.
Yeah.
I mean, that's that simple. I think really that's the big, and maybe it's naive of me to think that way, but I think the way to get over this hump is not talking about it.
Hmm.
Like maybe going back to a more, personal politics where it's personal, you know?
Sure.
Like
yeah.
What happens in the voting booth stays in the voting booth.
Yeah, that was great. There was a certain amount of keep your cards close to your chest.
Right.
You know, there's a certain amount of character that is associated with that, you know?
It was a big switch.
I mean,
what happened? Because like look at Facebook. It's a cesspool of both sides just creating their bubble. It used to be about making friends, and now it's about rooting them out.
Yeah.
Getting rid of friends.
And maybe it's things like that that have we're de-evolving in our ability to actually interact socially with people. And one of the things that strikes me, and I haven't read anything about it, I could be totally off the mark, but one thing I feel like I see much more nowadays is an inability for people to control their facial expressions, which to me... I see as a sign of character that you can hear something that you don't like or don't believe in and nobody even knows it.
Right.
You just keep it to yourself. And now there's like I see people, they cannot control their facial expressions anymore. And it's, again, it, they can't control their emotions,
yeah.
You know, and a lot, we've got to remember a lot of these emotions are false
yeah.
emotions, you know,
oh, yeah.
You remember that, like, we're still animals, you know, yeah. we like to think we're rational, logical creatures that we can overcome all this stuff, but sometimes it can't, you
yeah.
know? To go back to your point, let's remember this is still America, and for the most part, you are given a chance in America that you're not going to get in China, that mm-hmm. you're not going to get in Germany or Singapore or Switzerland. And one of the perfect examples, and I would really encourage, recommend folks to check this out. There's a series of documentaries. I think it's not. Based on YouTube, but that's where I've been, or based off YouTube, but that's where I've been seeing them. They're generally short, 5, 6, 7 minutes long, and they follow Chinese people as they live in the United States. Now, not Chinese Americans, but people who came from China to study over here, and a couple that I would like to bring up. These are folks who've decided to live here. They've immigrated right. here, and now they're citizens. And one was a guy. He came here when he was 18 to study. He's a cowboy now. He instantly fell in love with cowboy culture. He taught himself a Southern accent. If you listen to him on the phone, he would sound like he was from Texas.
Man.
You would never guess. He can ride a horse like nobody's business. He didn't know how to ride a horse when he got here. Now he's working on getting his own property, getting his own farm together. He says he's never experienced. He's all his experience are people just like awesome.
Yeah.
You know, just encouragement. Another guy. Moved from China for business, and he bought a farm here. He loves guns. He said that's one that he'll never go back to China because you can't have guns in China. They take guns away from you in China. And his collection of firearms, extraordinary.
Yeah.
I mean, and he has a business where he gets visitors from China. He takes them hog hunting, deer hunting, lets them shoot, you know, things they'll never be able to experience in China. Now, that one thing he says, they do hunting in China. Like, let's say if an area has a particularly bad feral hog problem, they'll round up citizens of the community, distribute them firearms, let them go hunt them, and then they take the firearms back.
Right.
You know?
And it sounds more like a duty than it is like, hey, this is going to be fun.
Right. Yeah. It's like a job, you
right.
know? I'm sure
right.
you'd have some fun with it. But, but looking, I mean, he's got, in the documentary, and again, it's just very short, very quick to watch, and very well done. You know, his bedroom, he's got the Texas Star up there. You know, he's got the Texas flag flying above the American flag, just like anywhere else you go in Texas.
Right.
You know, it shows some of his buddies that are taxidermiologists, I guess. Taxidermists.
We're keeping that in.
Yeah. I mean, he's got white and black friends that are from born and raised in Texas, will never leave Texas. And man, and he's just part of the gang, you
right.
know? Like they love him. Yeah. And
I'm not saying one is better than the other
mm-hmm.
because again, we've put both China and America up as these strict contrasts,
yes.
right? But
yes.
I could imagine that happens a lot more in America than an American dude, 18-year-old going over to China
oh,
and
yeah.
falling in love with that. But what we're talking about is, dude, America's so awesome. It really
mm-hmm.
is. It's so cool to live here. But maybe the reason it's so cool to live here is the reason we're also like failing at a lot of things.
Sure.
You know? So while I would doubt there's a whole lot of 18-year-old born and raised in America being like, I'm in love with the way the Chinese lifestyle, I'm moving over there. But they handled the virus. Like
mm-hmm.
nobody's business. They handle education like nobody's business. I mean,
but they're not. America is this huge experiment. No, there has never been a multicultural democracy like ours in the history of it. There's
right.
been none. You know, I mean, every day we're setting history in this country.
Yeah.
It's an experiment. You know, China, they can have a lot more success having this very strong, like, community-based society, again, where the community is more than the individual, because they're like 95% ethnically Han Chinese.
Right.
You know, they're a very
homogenous
sort of, group.
Yeah, yeah.
And like the few that aren't, like the Uyghurs, they're in concentration camps, you know, like a million of them,
right.
you know. So they certainly have that going for them as far as like keeping their society together and focusing. I think maybe like on the one of the last podcasts, you mentioned the 100-year plan that China has. Like
yeah.
they have plans in effect that the folks who are implementing the plans will long be dead by the
right.
time they come to fruition. But they still have that kind of that vision. And I think that surely a lot of that has to come through having such a homogenous society.
Well, that's it, man. Episode 12, Regrettable Podcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks for joining again.
You made it this far.
Man, awesome. Yeah, well done.
I can't believe deserve, I did.
Yeah, I don't know. Send us an email, regrettablepodcast@gmail.com, and ask if we can get you a gizmo. I'll find a gizmo and give it to you.
If you have thoughts on the show, write it on the back of a $20 bill and mail it to
us. That's right. We're going to keep saying that. I'll bless 19 $1 bills, send them back to you. You have to color a page in the booklet and send me 18 back.
Yes.
All right, 18 exact. No, okay. All right. Yep. That's it, though. Shout out for Jay Lindley. He'll be back next week. Patrick, I'm Tyler. Regrettable Podcast.
Yep.
Bye-bye.